Comics for Beginners Podcast, Episode 29. Drawing for a Living. Hello and welcome to the Comics for Beginners podcast. I'm Palle Schmidt, writer and artist based here in Copenhagen, Denmark, and the artist on Thomas Alsop from Boom Studios. If you haven't read that book yet, the first trade paperback of two should be out very, very soon, and it's a beautiful looking book. Kudos to the art design people over at Boom. They've done a really great job of doing the art for that. Last episode was called The Dark Side, last episode of this podcast. I have not been lost to the dark side since then. I've just been super, super busy. I am beta testing a new course right now. So if you're listening to this in the future, it may already be up. I'm also in the weird situation that my work calendar for 2015 is actually full already. We're not even out of March yet, which is kind of weird. I'm doing two books with my wife, writing two children's books with my wife that I'm also illustrating for the Danish market. So if you're not if you don't read Danish, then it will be lost to you. Also doing two graphic novel projects that I can't really talk much about right now, but yeah, it's weird that I know what I'm going to be doing for the rest of the year. I do love being freelance though, and that's what this episode is all about. It's called Drawing for a Living, and yeah, let's dig into the meat of this episode. I recently read this article online called Molly Crapable's 15 Rules for Creative Success in the Internet Age. I found a lot of it to be really good, and I'll touch on a few of her points in this episode. I also wrote my own piece called Top 10 Advice for Freelancers. I wrote this a few years ago as a guest post on makingcomics.com. I went looking for it a while back because I was asked for advice by a startup artist, but I couldn't find it, so I thought I'd record this podcast instead and see if maybe I have more to add or maybe change my mind about some of the things that I put on that list. Yeah, I've been a freelancer since 1998, and I've only ever considered filling out that application for the 7-Eleven job a few times. So it seems to be working okay. So I feel very fortunate that I've spent these past 15 years getting better at my craft while somebody else is paying me for it. So that's great. A lot of people first worry about getting paid, and then their own projects get shoved to the back. I always try to see it the other way around. I do my own stuff, and sometimes a job comes along and takes me away from that, and it distracts me. But as soon as that job is over, I'm back doing my own stuff, and I think that's helped me not to worry. In a way, being freelance is like swimming at night in the open water. You know, you're swimming in one direction, and you have no idea whether you're swimming towards land or just swimming in the wrong direction. And you have to find some kind of zen confidence and just keep going, because once you panic, that's when you drown. So, yeah, just keep swimming. And yeah, it's easy for me to say, obviously, because I've always had this kind of cushion of money. I've sort of had sort of a loan in my house pretty much throughout the years, and always managed to keep my expenses low. So yeah, I have this special kind of a loan account thing where when I'm making lots of money, I put the money in, and when I'm not making any money, I take the money out. But it's a kind of a loan thing. So yeah, so it's not, yeah, what is it? It's not a savings account. It's a loan in my house, basically. So anyway, Molly Crapable. I don't know this Molly person, but I found there was a really lot of good advice. I'll be sure to link to the article that she wrote. Is it a she? I don't even know. Molly? That must be a she. Anyway, I'll link to the article in the show notes. She talks about universal income, basic income for freelancers in her first point, and also about healthcare. That's another issue where I find myself inadequate in terms of giving advice, because I know that healthcare where I am in Copenhagen, Denmark, is laughably privileged compared to other countries. So healthcare is, I mean, we have it just because we pay taxes. So so that's not really a big issue for freelancers in my part of the world. I know it is in other parts. Her second point is a little bit more interesting, I think. She writes, "Companies are not loyal to you. Please never believe a company has your back. They are amoral by design and will discard you at a moment's notice." And that's it's true that as a freelancer, your employer is by no means obligated to even tell you when you've been fired. Like you come in to do a very specific kind of job, and who knows if they'll ever call you again? And they will promise you the moon and all this, but you know. Trust what you see and don't block out your entire year to work on some project and then and say no to everything else. And then when that project falls through, you're stuck with nothing. So that's her third point. She talks about different streams of income. Let me see. Some more about money. Her point number five I really found interesting. She says, "I've never had a big break. I've just had tiny cracks in this wall of indifference until finally the wall wasn't there anymore." I think that's a very valid point, that there isn't that one lottery ticket that just buys you the way into to all the great places. You know, you can have people who have published Eisner Award winning comics who are still struggling to get by, and so it's, there's no making it, is kind of a weird it's a weird thing because it doesn't really exist in that way. It's like every little job, well, maybe not job, because yeah, I don't know, Every project that you're really proud of that you want to do, is like you get this little piece of stone and you can build your own castle with that stone. But you don't build the castle from one stone. You build it from thousands, millions of stones. So, and sometimes, you know, a work for hire thing, if it pays really well, you can use that stone to build your castle, because that gives you the opportunity to turn down other work and work on some of your own stuff. But so that's helpful in one way, but you need to have some kind of big idea about what kind of castle it is that you want to build and what kind of rocks or stones you need to build that castle, if that makes any kind of sense. Her point number six is, don't be a dick. Be nice to everyone who's also not a dick. Help people who don't have the advantages you do, and never succumb to crabs in the barrel infighting. That's another thing that I really found hit home with me, because of envy among other artists and just fighting for scraps. That's not very helpful for anybody. So just try to think of it more as a karmic thing. When you know, what you give is what you get. Kind of you help somebody struggling, and hopefully somebody else will help you, and the universe will work itself out or something like that. Oh yeah, here's another one I really love. Number seven. Remember that most people who try to be artists are kind of lazy. Just by busting your ass, you're probably good enough to pull yourself forward. So why not try? That's a great point. She continues to talk about that rejection is inevitable. Let it hit you and feel the hurt and then move on, which is true, blah, blah, blah. Point number 11. I'm just skipping ahead here. Working for free is only worth it if it's with fellow artists or grassroots organizations you believe in, and only if they treat you respectfully and you get creative control. And that's true. You know, she has that in a later point. Don't work free for rich people. And she's onto something here, because a lot of people will, like I said, promise you the moon and try to convince you to, there's going to be a lot of exposure. That was actually a discussion online I saw somewhere where somebody commented on this exact issue. Somebody had been lured into doing something for exposure, and one of the comments was, you die from exposure. And that's true. Certainly, it can't make a living from exposure. You need cool cash and food on the table. All right, I think that was my take on Molly Crapable. Again, I'll link to the article in the show notes. So let me talk about my own top 10 advice and see if there's anything I can add here. My first point, my number one advice that I always give is keep your deadlines. Accountability is the number one thing clients are after. Talent is on the list, sure, but way down. If what you hand in isn't your best work, chances are they won't notice. But if you don't deliver on the agreed time, you bet they will notice. I think that still holds up. You know, you need to be accountable and to stick to whatever agreements you have. They need a drawing by Monday, not the best drawing in the world by next Thursday. That's not going to help them, you know. So do the best you can and really just stick to your deadlines. My second point on my list here is communicate. If you, for some reason, you can't keep your deadlines, call. Most editors and clients are responsible people who understand if your kid's sick or something that made it impossible to make your deadline. Give a heads up if things look tight. Ask if your deadline can be postponed. Usually can. Do not stick your head in the sand, dodge phone calls, and ignore emails. Well, looking at that now, that's a wrong way of saying it, because you do need to ignore emails. Plenty of ignoring emails goes on in my life because not everything is serious and needs a response. But you know, I'm in a very fortunate situation where I'm able to say no to some things, and definitely any kind of job offer or proposal needs a response. Yes, I do respond to that. So yeah, I don't ignore emails, no. But I give them a fast no thank you. Communicate more is my third point. If you sending Christmas cards and keeping up with people on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that, that's great. Have another few points that I'm not going to go into. One point is keep cool, which is what I already touched upon with the swimming metaphor. You need to be able to just swim forward, because there will be periods with no work and no income. Which leads me to the next point, which is have your own project. I think that's very important. Here's what I wrote in the article. One way of keeping cool when no business is coming in is by occupying your mind with other things. Make new products, think of new services, write that children's book or whatever. Don't sit around waiting for clients to call, biting your nails and worrying. That's something I've seen other freelancers do. You know, they wouldn't come into the studio because they didn't have any job in the calendar. And I was always just completely miffed that they didn't use the opportunity. Like, a blank calendar? That's great. Then you can work on that comic you've always talked about. It was like, I don't know. And I think the reason a lot of us tend to not use that time is because we're worried about money. I'm fortunate that, not that I never worry about money. Of course I do. I'm not a rich man or anything. It's just, I try not to worry about it. Things usually work out. My next point is, it's okay to say no. Early on in your career, you probably can't be too choosy with the work. So say no only if it's for free, like Molly Krapple said. If there's nothing to learn from it, and if you get a bad vibe from the people hiring you. Yeah, I need to touch a little bit about that on that, because the few times where I've been burned, my spider sense was ringing at the time, but it was drowned out by the smell of money and the cheap flattery of the people who were trying to hire me. But in retrospect, in hindsight, I see clearly that these people were untrustworthy, and I knew it at the time, but I still took on the job. And those are the kind of situations where I've kicked myself that got somebody who wouldn't pay the bill after I did some storyboard work for them, and I was like, ah, come on, man. I knew this. I knew it. I had the feeling. I had the spider sense tingling. And I still took the job because, yeah, they were promising the moon or whatever. But, but in hindsight, I should have said no. Let me see what else I'm writing here. But in the beginning, of course, you need to take on a lot of work. Here I write, just beware that taking on a certain kind of work usually leads to more of the same kind of work. So when you're being pushed for time and have too many jobs to juggle, maybe it's time to focus on a certain kind of output. And here's a little pro tip. If you find it difficult to say no to work, try jacking up the price. If they agree, that's great. Then you have more money for food on the table. And if they decide to take their business elsewhere, also great, because you didn't really want to do it, right? So. My next point, find a way to manage your time. Yeah, as a freelancer, the easiest thing in the world is to spend all your waking hours at work, and just as easy not to get any work done at all and spend your waking time beating yourself up over it. So structure is essential. Decide how many hours you're going to work in a week. Make a reasonable demand of yourself and reward yourself for sticking to it. Being your own boss requires discipline. Set a timer, set up some rules. I don't know about that last part. I don't set a timer, but what I do is I often plan out the day before what I'm going to be working on the next day. So I do prioritize the work that I want to get done, and try to cross the big things off the list first. And then obviously, yeah, you're freelance, you get sidewinded all the time by other things that's taking away your time and your lust for life. My last point on this list, find others to work with. Working at home in your bedroom can be very lonely and give way to an awful lot of Facebook time. If you can get an office or a studio space somewhere, do it. It gets you out of the house and sitting with other talented people who will hopefully inspire you creatively. It also helps divide the work and home life, so you don't end up doing house chores in the middle of work and work late at night while the kids are asleep. Leave it at the office. I don't do that. Don't tell anybody. Find a peer group of others working in your field, someone who will inspire you and help you deal with your self-doubts. Maybe they can even throw some work your way, or you can do the same in periods where you're buried in work. This is a great point still. I mean, I still recommend people joining a studio. That's totally made my career. I'm pretty sure I would not be able to live as a freelancer still if I hadn't started out at a studio where I had peers and people supporting, that's a support group around me saying, so whenever I was doubting myself and saying, I don't know about this drawing, is it good enough? And they would say, it's fine. What are they paying? Yeah, that's fine. Send it off. Great point. I was just thinking of something. I was sitting at Dean Haspiel's studio in Brooklyn for a couple of weeks a few years back, and I overheard him give a piece of advice to someone. Somebody said that he was going to take on the storyboard gig, and he hadn't done storyboards before, and he was a little bit worried about failing, and Dean said, you need to eat, right? I'm assuming you do need to eat. So you take the work and you fail hard and you learn from that. And I thought that was a great nugget of wisdom, one among many from Dean Haspiel that week. I think that's it's great to have somebody around you who can kind of call you out when you're being a sissy or a prima donna, and it's great to have somebody who's able to kick you in the butt when you're mulling over the same page for hours and hours or weeks, and just somebody you can ask for advice, like, how much should I charge for this? Is this page rate okay? Can I trust this writer I'm being approached by? Anybody knows this guy? And if you're lucky, somebody will call it out and say, oh, wait, no, don't work with this guy. He's totally unreliable or whatever. You should check out this publisher. I mean, many times there's been calls coming into the studio just for the studio, and I was the only one available, and I wound up getting it. So experience and money, good things, and a support group around you, also a good thing. And once you get to a certain place in your career where you're just getting in too many offers, you can bring people on board to help them or simply pass it along. And again, that karmic wheel will kind of help everything. Everything's gonna work out, man. Okay, so that was the end of my list. But I've put some new issues and written down a few notes here. How to spend my time. That's another thing I'm starting to mull over. There are so many things, you know, I could be doing in any given day, like networking and blogging and working on project A, B, C, whatever, follow-up research, answering emails, social media, sorting my portfolio, or just cleaning up the mess here at my studio, which it needs to be done. But I find, again, that it helps to plan ahead and do a list either the day before or even set long-term goals for the year. And this is something I've neglected in the past. I remember when I was at Periscope Studios in Portland. Those were the only two studios I've ever sat at out in the U.S., by the way. I'm not totally name-dropping or putting myself up to be something I'm not. I sat at a Periscope studio last year for 3 weeks, and I was talking over lunch with Lucy, who's there, and she said something about choosing projects from whether they fit into her long-term goals. And it blew my mind, because that's a conversation that I've never really had with other artists. And I'm not talking down on other artists. I mean, I didn't even do it myself, but we tend to just sit there and so what am I doing? Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, that's great. So what am I doing next week? Oh, well, and somebody calls and gives you a job, and oh, I guess I'm doing that. And you don't set some kind of a long-term goal. You just go from the day to day. Oh, it's money, and yeah, I'll take that, and I'll do that. But at least for me, that was very unsatisfying in the long run. So I'm trying to set longer goals for that. But then again, you know, the problem usually takes care of itself, because some job will show up like a monster truck from out of nowhere and just plow into you, and you take that job because you need the money, and you wind up doing that because there's a deadline. So but that's one of the things I'm thinking about these days, how to get the most out of my time. Another thing is social media. I mean, is it necessary or is it just a time suck? I still haven't made up my mind on this one, but I did recently delete the Facebook app from my phone because I found out that I was every time I was bored, which happens a lot, I guess, I would go on Facebook and scroll that news feed and get nothing. It's like, for me, it was like Facebook is like eating soup with a fork. You know, you're never really full. You never really get what it is you're going in there for. So I deleted that off my phone, and then I can go on my computer if I really need to do something. But the other thing was just a distraction. Like, it felt like sucking my thumb or whatever, whatever bad habit you have when you're a kid. So is there any advice that you feel that I've left out on Freelance Life here? Please leave a note in the comments. If you're listening to this on iTunes, leave a review. You can even leave a comment in the review. That would be great. But just leave a review, because that apparently that helps with the whole search engine thing, and more people can find the podcast. Hope you found this helpful. And that's it for me. Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Comics for Beginners podcast. For tutorial videos and more hands-on tips on how to write and draw comics, go to comicsforbeginners.com.